Broadcasting from behind the Second Amendment Iron Curtain in the shadows of the New York City skyline, this is Gun for Hire Radio, the voice of 1 million New Jersey gun owners, with your hosts, Sandy Berardi and Master Firearms Trainer, Anthony Calandra.
The weekly gathering place for over 1 million independent, freedom-loving gun owners.
Closet gun owners.
The most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. Go
ahead, Anthony. So, we're continuing from last week's show. We have Scott Bach, Dan Schmutter, Darren Goins, and Albert Almeida on the show. Albert, you'll be on after this break, I promise. He looks like Rumpelstiltskin now. His beard grew so much.
He does. He sports it well.
Nice. We're going to get into the Attorney General guidelines now, or directive on reasonable deviation. Scott, Dan, tell us what's going on here. You have one segment to do it, bitches.
Okay, big picture, just to remind everybody, this is one of the three actions taken by the Attorney General following up on Governor Christie's recommendations. And reasonably necessary deviations in transportation has been an issue that's plagued law-abiding gun owners for decades. Under the law, your transportation with firearms is supposed to be direct. And so for years, if you stopped for food or fuel or medical treatment or any other reason on the way traveling between, quote, authorized points, at that moment you became unlawfully in possession of a handgun, which in New Jersey's great wisdom, it has changed to a second-degree crime, which carries up to 10 years. So you stop to go to the bathroom, and you're looking at up to 10 years in jail. It's absurd. By the way, the legislature had the opportunity to fix this in 2013 when we were dealing with nearly 100 gun bills in the wake of Newtown. We actually had an arrangement made, and it was actually killed by Senator Loretta Weinberg. And so, you know, I mean, Dan will go into the details of what this does, but big picture, this adds great clarity and a lot more certainty than there was before. It's not perfect, but it's a hell of a lot better than it's been. There is, you know, it's pretty clear now what you can and can't do, and there are some guidelines, general guidelines for unidentified situations that will help you analyze if you're going to travel a certain way, where you can say, okay, this is what the Attorney General has said is important in this case. And so, you know, it's a big step in the right direction.
So, Dan, give us some input, please. Dan, from what law firm?
Hartman and Winicky.
And where are the offices?
We have offices in Paramus and Ridgewood.
Okay, just checking. Shameless plug. Go ahead.
Thanks, Anthony.
You're welcome.
That'll be $1,000, by the way.
$1,000.
The guideline issued by the Attorney General on reasonable deviations does basically three things. First thing it does is it creates certain safe harbors, that is, certain specific circumstances where you're presumptively deemed to be in a reasonable deviation. And it doesn't guarantee that you're safe in these situations, but generally speaking, you can consider that these are likely to be valid types of deviations. Second thing it does is it contains a general discussion on how to treat the reasonable deviation requirement. It gives sort of a discussion of how you evaluate it. You look at things like duration, you look at things like purpose, you look at things like the extent of the deviation, things like that. And there's a long discussion about how police are supposed to look at that. And then the third thing it does is it sets forth, which is kind of interesting, it sets forth a standard that police should apply in encountering an individual who may not have a justifiable deviation, may not have a reasonable deviation, and it advises police that as long as people are otherwise in compliance with the requirements for travel, they should not be making an arrest without consulting with the prosecutor, which is a very interesting feature of this whole thing. It sort of puts the benefit of the doubt in the hands of the gun owner.
Wow, so that monumental.
As long as they're otherwise in compliance, the police are advised that they should not just be making an arrest without consulting with the prosecutor first, simply because they think the reasonable deviation may not satisfy the requirements of the statute. So the guideline takes this at several different levels.
Now, will police be educated in this? How do they find out about this now? We don't really know that, right? I guess the police chief.
Well, I mean, of course we do. It's an attorney general guideline.
When they qualify every 6 months.
It gets disseminated to every police chief in the state.
And where's it, and if it's East Hanover, he's got his feet up going 18 months, 6 days, 7 hours, right. 51 minutes left. No, I know that when the police qualify here every 6 months, they have to go over any new AG guidelines or directives every 6 months. So I guess it'll take 6 months to a year before it gets to everybody. So go ahead, Dan. I like that last one, how the police have to notify a prosecutor before they lock our asses up.
Right. And what this does is it lays out the policy of the executive branch on how to deal with gun owners on these contentious issues. You know, as Scott said, reasonable deviations has been a very difficult issue because there was no authoritative law on what it means. There were no cases on this, and you really had to wonder, what does it mean to have a deviation that's reasonably necessary under the circumstances? You would think, you know, and people from out of the state, you just, you know, it's one of those things that people from out of state just cannot understand about New Jersey law, that you could theoretically be subject to criminal liability because on your way to the range you went to the bathroom, or you got something to eat, or you had to pick up supplies.
They have this in South Dakota, right, Darren?
You would love to see the deviations in South Dakota.
Yeah, there is none.
I think I sent Scott a photo on my phone when we were out pheasant hunting. We pulled into a gas station. I had the shotgun, of course, loaded in the parking lot. In the passenger side, you can shoot pheasants from the road. So I took friends back from Colorado, and I said, hit the brakes, I see one. I jumped down. They said, what are you doing? He said, man, you can get a felony for that. I said, not here. It's not illegal, but it's encouraged.
Encouraged. Love it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
And the reason that risk exists in New Jersey is because our regulatory structure is so upside down. You know, as you know, the way guns are regulated in New Jersey is that there are general broad prohibitions on possession, and then you have to fall within exemptions in order to be lawful. And so the transportation rules are exemptions. You're allowed to transport only under certain conditions. Otherwise, you're in violation of the law.
I want to thank you guys for all your hard work so far. When we come back, Albert's going to be on, and we're going to talk about his case and the changes in wording to justifiable need.
For over 20 years, attorney Evan Knappen has seen what rotten laws do to good people. That's why he's dedicated his life to fighting for the rights of New Jersey gun owners. A fearsome courtroom litigator, one of the first lawyers to ever get a federal injunction against a state gun law. An unrelenting gun rights spokesman, tearing away at the anti-gun propaganda to expose the truth. Author of 5 best-selling books on gun rights, including Knappen on New Jersey Gun Law. The bright orange gun law Bible that sits atop the desk of virtually every lawyer, police chief, firearms dealer, and savvy gun owner in New Jersey. That's what's made Evan Knappen New Jersey's gun lawyer. New Jersey gun laws are designed to make you a criminal. Don't become the victim of New Jersey's vicious anti-gun legal system. This is the guy you want on your side. Keep his name and phone number on a post-it note attached to your New Jersey firearms ID card in your wallet, and hope you'll never have to use it. But if you live, work, or travel through New Jersey with a firearm, the deck is already stacked against you. Keep his number with you always. You can find him on the web at evannappen.com, or take the link from the Gun for Hire radio resource page. Evan Knappen, New Jersey's gun lawyer.
The world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed.
And what better way to say I love you than giving the ones you love a gift to keep them safe? Lipstick Bodyguard. It looks just like a beautiful little lipstick, but just like a beautiful woman, it has the power to bring a grown man to his knees.
Lipstick Bodyguard. Fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
And this segment is brought to you by Montville Executive Suites, MontvilleOffice.com, soon to be Liberty Executive Suites, conveniently located in Montville, New Jersey. He will have one on New Road in Parsippany as well. He has 38 furnished private offices, a meeting room that'll hold 70 people, where we're hosting NJSafeCon.net on July 30th for CLE credits on a Friday. And then the 30th, the Saturday, we're going to have our big hoedown there at NJSafeCon.net. You know, Scott and Darren had to leave. They had stuff going on. But I will say that I might catch shit for this, but I know a lot of backroom dealings that goes on, and I can't say it publicly because then Scott and Darren would never share it with me again. And a lot of times I get frustrated because I see the bashers out there, or they'll come in here and vent to me, and I got to swallow it too. And I couldn't do their job, because if I was working as hard as I was working behind the scenes and my people were giving me shit for it, I would just say, F you all, I'm moving to Georgia. You know, that's right. Basically, and I know I'm going to get shit for that, but they eat a lot of crow, and they deal with, there's a lot of backroom dealings going on, and I wouldn't want their job of the past 8 years just holding the line. That really pisses me off, because as an entrepreneur, as a capitalist, I can't hold the line for 8 years. I guess right. You have to be a right. lawyer, or you have to be a lobbyist, because there's no way. That, Albert, would you sweep the same pile of shit across a room for 8 years?
Absolutely not.
Right. Eventually, you get to the point where, get a match. I'm burning this MF right. down. Right. You know, right. like, I got to go. So I give them credit for that. Now, Albert Almeida is on the show. And Albert has an interesting story to share. And Dan and Albert, myself and Sandy, we're going to talk about it, because the Attorney General also has changed the wording for justifiable need. Now, for everybody listening, this is so new that we don't have any test case yet. Nobody's gone with the new wording, to my knowledge, yet, and has applied for a carry permit that has previously been denied and now issued a carry permit. Albert, give us a quick synopsis of your carry permit denial. I love this story. Dan, if you're not fully aware of it, you will be.
Well, it started back in 2013, as most of you are aware, where I was had a credible death threat by a Bloods member, where he threatened me different 15 different ways, how he was going to kill me, rob me, how they were going to find my body on a dead-end street, all just because I had to evict him from a property. I applied for the carry permit due to those terroristic threats. I was denied due to the lack of justifiable need. We appealed it. Evan Appin represented me. The Sussex County Superior Court denied it. Prosecutor argued that I could change my job, perform my private business in a different manner, or hire a private security guard to go out and...
Now, we've had Albert on the show after this happened. He was so basically told, we're not going to give you a carry permit. You can hire a private security guard. But if you can't do any of that, then just find a new line of work. Now, he owns his own property management company.
He owns his own business. So right. It's find a new business.
So,
and, of course, they'll help you do that.
So, right. I mean, anywhere else in the world, I would imagine that would be a violation of some sort, telling somebody to find a new line of work. So he was. That was the final denial, or
then,
or
no?
That,
so then we appealed it to the appellate division, and the appellate division, you know, they agreed that they denied it, and they added, they agreed with the lower courts and with the prosecutor, but they added in, since I have not suffered substantial bodily harm, I don't meet the justifiable need criteria.
So as other lawyers, Nepin, would say, in New Jersey, they would issue you a carry permit posthumously. After you're dead, they deliver it to your gravestone right. or correct. Your
and
family.
They paste it on the stone.
So Dan, talk to us now about this wording.
I just wanted to add, please. Since the appellate denial was in August, since then I've had five more serious incidents. One of them was an attempted robbery with a screwdriver, where somebody came up behind me with a screwdriver and tried to rob me.
Are all your properties in Newark?
Majority okay. are Newark, Jersey City, East Orange. Majority.
Well, we should be fine then, because of the gun laws being so
right.
good in New Jersey.
One of the incidents was also on January 6th, where I had a gun pointed to my face because I confronted somebody that was trespassing one of the properties. We kicked him out of the building. He came back 20 minutes later, put a gun to my face and my employee's face, and said, "You guys need to watch your back, because next time I'm coming around, you're going to get some of this."
But it was a legal issued gun. It was a permitted.
I highly doubt it was
highly credible.
It was a community gun. A legal community gun.
They passed it.
So are you ready to reapply now with the new wording?
Yeah, absolutely. I have majority of the paperwork in order. Actually, after the show, I'll go and do the qualifications.
Charlie will take care
of it. I just put in and see what happens.
Now, to each one of these incidents, do you have to then go and make a police report?
All five incidents have a police report, right?
Attached to it.
And witnesses, if his worker was with him when the gun was pointed at him. Correct. It's not like he's making this crap up, right?
Now, which just, it just galls me, because we shouldn't even have to have this conversation. We have to constantly say, "Mother, may I," to a higher authority in the state that determines whether our life is worthwhile or not.
Correct.
That it is not a natural law. It is something, it is a right to be bestowed upon us from our overlords.
So, Dan, how do you read this? Can you tell us in English what Christie and the AG did so that Albert might have to reword his letter after he listens to you today?
Sure. First of all, just one important thing procedurally. The amendment to the justifiable need regulation was proposed in March. Under the Administrative Procedure Act, there is a notice and comment period required, and the notice and comment period expires. I think it's May 6th or May 7th.
May 6th.
Right. So it's not finalized. It can't be finalized until after the notice and comment period. After the notice and comment period, then the state police can then respond to the comments, can finalize the regulatory change, or can alter the regulatory change depending upon what they decide to do. So it's not final yet. So nobody can actually go into court and rely on the regulatory change yet.
Go ahead.
Now, the proposed change, there are actually two changes that have been proposed in the new regulation. One dealing with the scope of the type of people who could qualify under justifiable need. And the second change has to do with the nature of the danger. And I think it's the second change that potentially Albert could take advantage of to improve his chances qualifying for a permit.
Will your law firm be handling stuff like this in the future?
Sure.
Okay. All right.
Potentially
handling it. Potential for you. That was very specifically
exactly
directed.
So
it's potentially for you.
But go into both of them in detail. This was the reason why, when we come back, this is the reason why I wanted Albert on, because he's a test case right here.
Right.
For many people, walking into a range the first time, it's quite intimidating. So when you walk in through the double doors, the first thing you'll see on your left is a concierge. When people walk in, they can take a tour of the range, or maybe they're coming in for an appointment with one of my instructors or me, and they'll be directed to the right classroom. It kind of softens the entire experience. It makes people feel more at home. As you walk further into the range, you're going to notice we have New Jersey's only indoor 50-yard range, which is heated and air-conditioned. The dividers in each port are bulletproof. They're extra-wide ports, so two people can stand side-by-side and shoot. There's lights in the ports, so you're well-lit. We also have three times as much light downrange that the average range would have, because I believe it's important that the targets are well-lit. Our target retrieval system is all digital. You program how many feet you want to send it out, and it stays there. Both of our ranges are tactically baffled, which means when we run our higher level courses, you can move forward to the firing line and shoot in any direction, and bullets can't escape. When you come out of the 50-yard range, to your left, you'll see our large classroom, and go back up to the concierge and make a right, we have two smaller classrooms. And those classrooms are for small one-on-one classes, our Build-A-Bear, building an AR. As you enter through there, you'll see that we have a portal with a key to go into our Platinum Lounge. They can sit around and watch TV on the leather chairs or couches, and they can maybe work deals with their clients. And you normally don't see a cafe in an indoor range. New Jersey, we have this archaic law where you're only supposed to go from your house to the range to the house with no unnecessary deviations. I'm seeing a lot more families coming in now where they have multiple kids and the wife will stay in the cafe with one or two kids and they'll do a handoff. To me, it's very important that people are treated like family. So the bathrooms are very high-end. We used marble and corian and really nice tile and full-length dividers so that people are comfortable when they come in. When you exit the bathroom, you'll see the Gun for Hire radio studio where Sandy and I tape our show. After you pass that and you make a left, you'll notice our retail area. Over 120 firearms for rent. As you turn 180 degrees, you see the large sections of bulletproof glass. That's our 25-yard range. And inside our 25-yard range, we have 13 ports. Those ports are even wider than the 50-yard range. Both ranges have full-time range safety officers. In case you have any questions or concerns, they're there to help you.
Freedom.
No rules, no apologies, no holding back. Gun for Hire Radio, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. 4 years running.
This segment is brought to you by Waldorf Chiropractic, WALDORFCHIRO.com. Waldorf Chiropractic, conveniently located in Bridgewater, New Jersey. Dr. Eric is pro-gun. He wrote his own book, Yes, Chiropractic Can Help You. If you or anyone you know lives within a 30-mile radius of Waldorf Chiropractic, please support those who support us. So we have Dan on. Dan's law firm handles permit stuff like this. Dan has also written briefs for the U.S. Supreme Court. He's also helped me personally and professionally with input and direction. And the reason I have him on at the same time as Albert Almeida is because of Albert being denied the carry permit numerous times all the way up to the appellate court, where in the same county that Albert lives, the pet shop owner that was kidnapped was denied the first time, and then he was given a carry permit on appeal. You want me to kidnap you? I'll kidnap you.
Just don't punch me in the eye like they punched
him. Yeah, they broke his eye socket. Yeah, they hurt him bad. Yeah, really so Dan, you want to go over the new wording? And again, Dan is here on his own time from Hartman and Winicky. And the reason I'm plugging him is the other guys that were on, they do this stuff for a living already. Dan took time out of his law firm to come down here and give us some input. And when I was scoping out who I wanted on the show, Albert came to mind first because of his denial, and Dan came to mind second because of the way he reads and writes briefs and motions, which I give you a triple plus for that.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you. So go ahead, Dan. Break them down for us while I take a nap.
It's important to understand how the justifiable need law and how the law governing how that works came about and what the new regulation does and why it can do it the way it does it. The statute that the legislature enacted just simply says that an applicant has to demonstrate justifiable need. They don't define what that means. Okay, we didn't get a definition of what justifiable need is until the New Jersey Supreme Court weighed in on it. And so we don't know what that is from the legislature. There are two Supreme Court cases dealing with this. One is called Sicardi versus State, and the other one is called In re Price. And in both cases, the New Jersey Supreme Court attempted to flesh out how you come to justifiable need, how you establish it, what the applicant has to show in order to satisfy the standard and be entitled to a permit. And as we know, it's very, very difficult. But beyond what the Supreme Court did, the state police then went and promulgated a regulation where they purported to extract the criteria from those cases and codify them in a written regulation. And what the current regulation says, prior to the proposed changes, what the current regulation says you have to establish, it says a private citizen shall specify in detail the urgent necessity for self-protection as evidenced by specific threats or previous attacks which demonstrate a special danger to the applicant's life that cannot be avoided by means other than the issuance of a permit to carry a handgun. Now, it's that second part of the sentence. That second part of the sentence is one of the things that Albert's running into, because when the court is telling him get another job, hire a bodyguard, things like that, and so the two key changes that the superintendent of state police is proposing here is adding a category in addition to specific threats, which sounds like Albert has, or previous attacks, another category called serious threats. And the reason they're adding serious threats is because that's language that comes straight out of the Sicardi case. What that does is it actually expands the universe of people who might qualify, because the superintendent of state police explains it in discussing where this regulatory language is coming from, that it could allow people who are in a categorical danger to qualify. So even if someone is not specifically saying, I'm going to kill you, if you're part of a group of people, let's say you're a member of a church that's been threatened, or let's say the example they give is a taxi driver who drives in an area where taxi drivers have been mugged or killed or attacked in particular, it gives you, as a member of a particular group that might be in danger, the possibility to qualify for a permit where, under the old regulation, if you personally weren't threatened, you wouldn't have. So although that's not shall issue and right to carry, which we all wish we had, it does add to the group of people who could qualify for a permit. The second thing they've done, and this is the one that's particularly useful perhaps to Albert, is adding the word reasonable means. So whereas it said previously, a special danger to the applicant's life that cannot be avoided by means other than the issuance of a permit to carry a handgun, it's going to be, assuming this is finalized, that cannot be avoided by reasonable means other than by the issuance of a permit to carry a handgun. That makes that could potentially make a fundamental change when prosecutors or courts are saying, go change your job, change your fundamentally change your life, go hire a bodyguard. Because then the question is, well, is it reasonable to expect someone to upend their entire life and fundamentally change how they live, or to change their career, change their business, spend an enormous amount of money on a bodyguard? That introduces a major change into how that potentially will be determined. And that's something that, you know, hopefully Albert will be able to take advantage of. And so to the extent that Albert may be one of the early applicants to test this out, his situation could present a very good test case for this new language.
But now it's dependent on how judges construe this. How does this work?
Absolutely. These kinds of things are always dependent upon how judges construe it. One of the things, though, that is valuable in making the argument is that we know that these changes have to affect some sort of difference in the outcomes. So because we know that it used to say specific threats or previous attacks, and now it says serious threats, specific threats or previous attacks, a judge is required to understand that serious threats are different than specific threats or previous attacks. Now, how they interpret that and how they apply it, we don't know. We do know that they are going to be required to include something new. There's got to be now some group of people that didn't qualify under the old language that have to qualify under the new language. What that group of people is going to be based upon, is going to be dependent upon how the judges decide this. But there does have to be some new group of people that qualifies. Similarly, with the reasonable means, again, the case law, the judges are going to have to make a determination that there's something different about this new standard. It's not this, it can't be the same as the old cases. So you're not going to be able to cite old cases necessarily for the proposition that any way of avoiding the threat other than a handgun is something you have to do, because now there's a new standard they have to apply. So while we can't predict what the judges are actually going to do, we do know that they're going to have to do something new.
So like someone who works at a convenience store at night might fall into that group if one person gets a carry permit who's had serious threats.
Well, perhaps. Again, it's really hard to predict because, you know, you just don't know. This is new, so you just don't know how people are going to interpret it. But, you know, it does open the door for what I call these categorical arguments. You know, people that are in threatened groups. You know, you still aren't going to qualify if you're just generally afraid or if you necessarily just live in a bad neighborhood. But if you can identify yourself as part of a group that is under serious threat, that opens the door for people to possibly qualify.
So you might open the door, Albert, for other property managers and for, in a lesser extent, like a superintendent. If I was a superintendent in East Orange for a 5,000-unit apartment complex, right?
That's correct.
If you get it and I was that super, you just opened the door for me.
Correct.
Right? I mean,
or at least for the argument.
It's similar jobs. For the argument, I'm saying, Dan. You know, I'm not saying that it's cast in concrete, but that could actually, you can help other people.
Someone who works in a high-risk area?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. I mean, I can see it. Like, people who work in convenience stores at night are habitually getting robbed. And, you know, if one was robbed and threatened or shot at and they got a carry permit, now you've opened the door for that whole group of people.
I'll tell you what, as far as convenience stores goes, I mean, it's an interesting example. So to fit in with the way the state police have laid this out and have discussed it. So, for example, let's say you own a convenience store. You work in a convenience store in a particular area. And there are reports that, you know, one after the next are getting robbed, right, or people are getting shot. So there's one down the street that where somebody got shot, and then the one on the next block is getting, you know, got robbed. If you could establish that there's a pattern of convenience stores being robbed and you're kind of next, this opens the door to the argument that, look, they haven't come to threaten me. Nobody came in my front door and said, I'm going to kill you next. But you can see that the group of us are under threat. They're taking out convenience stores in this neighborhood. And so it opens the door for that kind of argument, which would have been foreclosed under the old language.
So if we play our cards right and people do this right, it could evolve to where more permits are issued.
It should. And again, you just don't know what's going to happen. But this definitely makes it easier for certain types of applicants to prevail.
Albert?
My only concern there is if you're an employee, will the convenience store owner actually allow their employees?
Yeah, well, that's going to be their problem, you know. Right. What you need to do now is you need to get sneakers, a throwaway gun, and a mask, and you need to start robbing a community gun.
Yes.
You need to start robbing all the other property managers in the area.
Or you could just pay this nice gentleman who's
well,
in
my
another
goal
business.
Is to,
Dan has his fingers in his ears while we're saying this. But okay, so now, Dan, what about a woman who's a victim of domestic violence? Would that open the whole scope for other victims of domestic violence?
Well,
veterans.
Like Carol Brown,
what this doesn't do is create this sort of bootstrap that you're describing, right? Just because you fall into a particular category, everybody in that same kind of category automatically gets in. It allows the threat to be a little bit more diffuse in order to bring you within the scope of applicants who might prevail. That's really what it does.
Right.
Let's talk about that and Carol Baum when we come back. Albert, we have, I think, two more segments, so we'll get to the federal too, but I want to talk about your stuff more.
Time and memories. The two most precious things you can give someone. No cell phones, no video games, no electronic devices. No interruptions. Just your favorite gun, a couple boxes of ammo, and time spent together. The folks at Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range believe there's no time like the present, and no present like time. Step through their doors, and you'll feel time stand still. It may look like a luxury shooting range, but what they really sell is the perfect day, and perfect memories are made from perfect days. Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range, where family memories begin.
This segment is brought to you by PhillyGunTraining.com. My brother was in the hospital. They thought he had a stroke. They think now it might be just stress and high blood pressure. I was checking my phone, so F you all for being tardy. Yeah, drama. No F in drama. Philly Gun Training, Philadelphia Firearms Training. Jose Morales is down in where, Sandy?
Philadelphia.
Where? Philadelphia. Spring Garden.
Spring Garden, yes.
Spring Garden, right next to the gun range across the street from the police department that issues the permits in Philly proper. So check out PhillyGunTraining.com. So Christie's people in the AG cite the Carol Baum tragedy in this report, Dan, where she applied for a permit and waited more than 30 days, and she was murdered by her ex-boyfriend, who was a crazy guy. So what I'm saying is, I know you talked about bootstrapping it in, but if one woman is a domestic violence victim and she gets a restraining order and her boyfriend violates the restraining order and she gets a carry permit, it could possibly make it easier for other women to get carry permits that are victims of domestic violence? Yes or no?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because
not the answer I wanted, but well, hey, I took a shot.
Yeah. For a situation like that, you still need to make an individualized showing in the sense that you still have to show the danger.
So if her boyfriend violated the restraining order, that would show the danger.
Well, I don't know that really changes here. Again, it doesn't change the kind of danger. What it changes is how you fit into a person who can show the danger. It's subtle, but you still have to show that there's special danger.
Okay. I got one more scenario, and then I want Albert to talk more because he wanted to be on the show so bad, and all he's doing is sitting there watching his beard grow.
I'm eating all your mints.
I own a gun range and a gun store. I don't need a carry permit because it's my property, and I can walk around armed on my property. But without a carry permit, I can't get in my car and go home with my gun on. I'm supposed to take it off and lock it up in my range before I leave. Would that be a need to apply for a carry permit, because I feel that leaving the store at night, I could have large amounts of cash, I could have guns, I could be picking guns up from a prosecutor's office tomorrow.
Here's a good example. Suppose you could show that gun ranges were being targeted.
Okay? They're not, though. See, I'm working a different angle.
I hear you. But this is illustrative of how it works, or how it appears that it's going to work. And until it actually happens, until we seek judicial decisions, we really don't know how they're going to treat this. But the way it appears is that if you could show that there are people hitting gun ranges one after the next, and a pattern of hitting gun ranges, under the old rules, you'd probably have to show that they're coming after you specifically.
Oh, okay.
You know, that you got a letter in the mail, you know, with the letters cut out of the magazine saying, "I'm going to kill you." Right, that's the old rule. Under the new rule, you might have a very good argument to say, look, we can show a pattern that people are coming after gun ranges. I own a gun range. I feel I can show special danger. That's where you'll have an advantage, because under the old rules, you probably would have no chance of getting a permit. Under the new rules, you might have a better shot.
What about, let me just cut it. What
Please,
about
I want
veterans
you to.
With the ISIS threat?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Veterans. With the ISIS threats,
yeah, that's an example of that would
great
probably
point.
Be a good, that would probably be a good test case to say, you know, where you're in a discrete group of people where there's information that's been disclosed to an organization that presents a threat. That could be an interesting case. Someone like that may very well benefit from this. That would be very interesting to see how that works out.
We have a lot of veterans in New Jersey that want to apply or carry because of that, because their personal information has been compromised.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Think about it. You know, it might be another angle. Albert, so you're obviously May 6th. We have to wait until May 6th when they close all the comments and input for this. You're going to come back on the show. You're going to keep us posted for this. And Dan, you're going to keep us
as
posted.
Long as you keep on offering me mints.
You can get free mints. You're a member here. You paid for them. What I also want to do is, Dan, obviously your ear is on the railroad tracks listening all the time. I want you to keep your eyes and ears open for any permits that are being issued or denied. If we have any of that info, I'd love to share it with our listeners. Almost like, you know, crib notes on, you know, what's going on. I mean, they've been screwing us in backdoor deals for the past 40 years. There's no reason why we can't use a little of the information age to share. And I know it. There'll be guys like, if Albert gets approved on the next one, he'll be telling everybody how, who, why, and where, so that other people will have a shot. But looking at his case now, Dan, you know, again, not holding you to it, he does stand a much better chance under this.
Yeah, I would say certainly. I mean, that reasonable language that was definitely targeted towards that type of problem.
But now, you as a guy who's an attorney and litigate and write briefs and motions and everything, would it be in his interest to be before the same judge or a different judge? What do you think?
He doesn't really have a choice. The each vicinage, each county has the gun judge, so the gun judge handles firearms applications. So you can't unlike most litigation. You can't go shopping for a judge, and unlike most litigation, where it's to a certain extent it's random which judge you get. That's not the case with firearms.
Now, how do you think this judge I don't know who it is, and I don't care, but how do you think this judge is going to feel getting this case again with this new language? Do you think he's going to have, especially if he's anti-gun, he's probably going to have the attitude, oh, F them,
well,
I'll find another way around.
Well, he was anti-gun enough to be able to come up with the bullshit of get a new...
That was the prosecutor told him.
Oh, that was prosecutor. He agreed with the prosecutor. So.
Okay. Well, I will tell you that it really depends, because I had a case that I was seeking certification from the Supreme Court. On a New Jersey Supreme Court on a permit denial, and the transcript of the proceedings before the law division judge, the Superior Court judge at the trial level, when you read the transcript, it almost read as if the judge really wanted to give him the permit, but felt that he just couldn't. He just felt that the law constrained him from giving him the permit. So in a situation like that, where there's now new law that the judge can rely on to come out of the old standard and come into a slightly different standard, you know, in a situation like that, you might very well see that judge who may have denied it the first time may grant it the second time. It depends on the judge and what the judge's feeling about the law is, understanding of the law, and what the judge feels his obligation is as someone on the bench. So in a situation like I described, this could make a big difference, because those marginal cases where a judge kind of feels for the guy, and this guy had a lot of threats. This guy was running down the streets of Newark with people, not shooting at him, but chasing him with firearms. So, you know, gang members. So the judge, you could tell from the transcript, the judge really felt for the guy, but felt he was constrained and felt he didn't have flexibility. These kinds of changes can make differences in those cases.
What do you think, Albert?
I heard that at the beginning, 2 years ago in 2013, that, you know, it was looking really good for me. Most likely I would get my permit, and here we are now. We all know the story. So.
3 years, 3.5 years later, you know, but it's really dependent on the judge and the judge's attitude. And you know, I have a lot of judges that come in here and shoot. We're not allowed to take their pictures, say their names, because they'll get in trouble. And I've had these pro-gun judges, and I've said to them, I said, damn, how come you guys don't issue like the carry permits and stuff? And they said that the assignment judges won't assign them gun cases if they know that they're gun guys or girls.
And this is one of my biggest frustrations, as you're well aware of, is we've been dealing with this here for over 3 years now, and it's still in New Jersey. Why can't we get this case? And if I get denied again, let's get this case out of New Jersey. There just seems to be not that much motivation, a lack of interest, and not just my case. I'm sure that I'm not the only one in New Jersey that feels
but
like
our,
this.
But our last case, Dan, was Dan. We were together in Trenton, right? When we got the information for the last Supreme Court case that they denied cert, right?
No, I wasn't with you, but I was on the phone.
With us.
No, I was on the phone.
Oh, you were on the phone. We were calling you.
Yes,
you
yes.
kept checking on the computer.
That's right.
Was that Peruta?
That was the Drake case.
The Drake case.
Yeah.
The Drake. Okay. So now what? We know the Supreme Court right now is 4-4 or so, or, you know, it might not be on our side, Albert, but the Supreme Court keeps denying right to carry cases. It's like they don't want to touch it. Am I right, Dan?
Well, you got to go to the federal court before you get to SCOTUS, correct?
Right. We've seen one after the next of carry cases denied cert by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has not wanted to hear these cases. It's really not just carry cases. It's Second Amendment cases generally that they've not wanted to hear. There are still cases in the pipeline. There is Peruta, which is now being heard in the Ninth Circuit by the full court, or what they call the en banc court.
The
three-judge panel ruled favorably on the right to carry challenge, and now the full court's going to has heard oral argument. They haven't had rendered a decision yet. There is also the Wren case that's making its way through the District of Columbia. And then there's a case called Batty up in Massachusetts that's sort of just getting going. So that's a fairly young case.
Palmer out of D.C.
But until we have a fully constituted court, it's very hard to tell what might happen. You know, if we end up with a court hostile to the Second Amendment, then it's very different than if we have end up with a court that could be favorable to the Second Amendment. But as we know, we had a court favorable to the Second Amendment when we had Justice Scalia, and we still didn't have the court that really wanted to hear these cases.
Drake broke everybody's heart. Everybody had a lot of work into Drake. Dan, yourself as well, correct?
Right.
And when the Supreme Court decided not to hear it, I don't know what's it take to get a case from New Jersey to the federal level. I don't even know, to be honest with you. If you could share that with us, Albert.
After the appellate denial, that was one of the discussions we had, is taking it over to the bypassing the New Jersey Supreme Court and taking it over federally. And as you were well aware, SAF was going to fund that project. And going on almost a year now, I haven't heard anything. So I don't know what it takes. Obviously, you know, needs to be petitioned to go to federal level. Dan would, you know.
Now I'm hoping it's not Albert. I'm hoping he gets his carry permit with this new directive. But will it be better to go federal with a new carry case in New Jersey under this new language, you think? It gives us more ammunition, for lack of a better term, Dan, do you feel?
This new regulation doesn't really impact the federal issues because the federal issue really has to do with, you know, dealing with in terms of Drake and things like that. Federal issue really has to do with the gross denial of right to carry. This only is a small tweak in the overall prohibition.
Gotcha. Last segment when we come back. Good, I got.
I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise. And although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
Crank it up!
I don't think Con 40 is.
NewJerseySafeCon.net, July 30th. NJSafeCon.net. It's going to be a blowout there. Maybe we'll be celebrating Albert Almeida's CCW there. He will be selling copies of his right to carry letter, his justifiable need letter, if you want. I will be brokering that deal, by the way. If he gets approved, I will be helping with the letters.
That's not right.
And we will be having a professional threat and intimidation company that can develop credible threats for you.
A seminar.
Dan's got his fingers in his ears and he's shaking his head back and forth.
I have a million gun owners right now in New Jersey saying, F you.
We have
what does it do for me?
Speaking of freaking lawyers, Evan Knappen, May 13th, his gun law seminar here. I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about these three things.
Evan, answer your email.
Good luck. Evan, answer your email. And also, Masad Ayoub will be here June 4th and 5th for the MAG 20. Every time he's ever been here, it's been sold out. So, and he's not getting any younger. And learn from my master like I learned. Okay? NJSafeCon.net, Knappen, and Masad Ayoub. So, I'm sorry, Dan. So, continue when you didn't hear me saying things like that. What were you saying now about, we were talking about the Supreme Court. Wait, real quick, Albert, so you're good. How long is it going to take now after May 6th, Dan, do you think, for the...
It's hard to say. They could consider changes based on the comments. They typically respond to the comments. You know, if they want to fast track it, they could get all that done quickly and finalize it. If they don't want to, then they could drag it out a little bit. So it's really hard to say.
So again, we get another lawyer answer, right. A truthful lawyer answer. But it is what it is.
What's your opinion on having the New Jersey gun owners reach out to the state police in this comment period. And
I think people should provide comments. They should normally what people
positive
would
comments.
Do is they yeah mm-hmm. normally what people would do is they would either present criticisms if they think that there's something that's, you know, shouldn't be done or should be done differently, or some additional language that should be added, or they could provide supportive comments that the language is favorable. And it's not just the state police. Agencies generally will respond to the comments, and they'll act accordingly. I mean, if they think that the comments are worthwhile, they do sometimes make changes. Or if they think that the original language is what's appropriate, then they'll adopt it.
Well, there you go. Everyone listening, make sure you reach out to the New Jersey State Police and write some positive comments.
Yeah, no derogatory crap. Don't talk like Anthony, okay? Right. I do that for entertainment purposes, all right? Educated, thank you for your time. Not that you have to kiss anybody's ass, but legitimate input, and let's see what happens. Listen, we got it this far, and Scott alluded to the fact that there is hopefully more coming down the pike, but you have to remember there's only so much we can do with Christie and the AG. And again, I know that because what's it, Michael Daugherty? Daugherty, how do you say his name?
Daugherty.
He's introduced that carry bill for the past 15 or 16 years now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at it and go, yeah, whatever. But people that are just getting into the gun sports see him introduce that and they're like, oh, freak out and push it. Listen. Right.
I think we need to communicate this better.
Correct. Prieto and Sweeney, they ain't never bringing that up for vote, ever. Right. Okay, ever. They screw each other. Who's the senator that he had a problem with? The Republican whose father was the governor.
Kane.
He shelved Kane bills that were time sensitive that had EPA issues tied to him and stuff.
Right.
Sweeney was pissed off at Kane Jr. He's like, tough shit. I'm not putting your bills up for vote. And they missed the mark when they were supposed to do some EPA environmental cleanups.
Right.
Okay, for tit for tat. You think Sweeney and Weinberg and Prieto, they're going to look at us gun people and put this bill up for a vote? Bullshit. Charlie Maynard, Big Butt Maynard, he pissed them off. And he's no longer an assemblyman.
Right.
Because he didn't back Fulop in Jersey City.
Exactly.
Fulop sent the membership messages down in Trenton. Where's Charlie Maynard now? He's back to being a sergeant doing 30-second magazine changes when he qualifies on the police department. Okay? Well, that's what he said under oath. It took like 30 seconds to change a magazine.
Okay? Embarrassing.
Very embarrassing. But they knocked him right back down. They eat their own.
Right.
Okay, remember that they eat their own. So don't think that we're going to be special. Listen, nobody's more frustrated than me. I would like to buy a house in Florida something and not pay, state income tax. And I own a business here. I'm 2% European Jew, right? We looked that up with my DNA stuff. I like a good bagel. I like 24-hour diners, and I like my malls. I'm not leaving New Jersey anytime soon, and my business is here. So I've been fighting it. I donate to the Civil Rights Defense Fund. I support this sumbitch sitting next to me, Albert, right? We do this radio show. Stick my neck out gets me in trouble all the time, right? It's tiring after a while. You get beat up. I don't even know how Scott and Darren do it all the time. And I'm guilty of beating them up, too. I beat them up more personally than you guys can imagine.
Right.
I break their chops publicly, but I beat them up personally. And just like I talk about Fatty, who sued Haldon and, Albert, and I talk about Albert, I give these guys a lot of credit because he got big stones to take it as far as he did. And Dan, you can't be too loved in New Jersey handling gun cases. I'm sure the majority of attorneys are not big on what you're doing.
It's not very popular among attorneys, but it's important.
But if you chased ambulances, it's a cool thing.
If it was a slip and fall.
It's amazing. You're not one of those. You're not, well, call 1-800-I-FELL, and you'll get money.
Look, Anthony, a substantial part of my practice is fighting against government abuses of all types. I mean, it's not just the Second Amendment stuff that I do. I do First Amendment work. I fight against regulatory excesses. I represent clients against, who own real property, against DEP, against regulatory boards. So, there's a theme that's very important, which is, protecting people's rights. And that's what I do.
And you go back to what Darren said. There's... 12% gun owners out of 12.6% out of 8.8 million people. Now let's take that. How many people are active? Besides the four in this room, about 150 more on top of that.
Yeah, right.
I swear
right.
that's all there is.
Right.
There's about 200
same
of us
faces
that
see
are active all the yeah. time.
Same names
okay?
you read all the time yeah. on the group.
Yes, right. always. About 200. Then there's another 20,000 that bitch about you. Listen, I say water wet, water dry.
Right.
They post. It doesn't
right.
matter what you post, right?
Right?
We got another 20,000 of those, and then we have a million that could give a crap.
They don't give a shit, right? Absolutely.
They could give a crap.
They don't care.
Like
they
you
don't
when
know.
You go to
not...
the gun clubs,
oh
right?
My
go to
God.
The trap club.
Oh
they could give
God.
A shit.
They don't even care. They're completely unaware of everything that's going on around them. As long as they, you know, they want to speak about. It's 7/8 of an ounce shot for whatever.
That they know.
That they know.
So this is what we deal with, and it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
And I thank everybody that listens and hangs in there. And Albert, I'm really interested in your case. And Dan, what else do you have? What else do you feel about this? These orders. You feel? I know you work back the scenes with this, behind the scenes with this. I know that. Look at his face. Yeah, see? Aha! He's got a tell. Want to play poker later?
I'm a terrible tell. Poker player.
Listen, because there's plenty of times I have a very close relationship to Scott Buck. I gave him his first gun lesson 25 years ago and ruined his life. And there's times I'll call him up and I'll be like, I'm working with the governor's people. I got Dan on the other line. Aha! He just ratted Dan out. I know Dan's involved. I got Nappet on the line. I got this one on the line. So I know there's a lot of shit going on all the time. And I know you guys do a lot of work, and I want to thank you for that. And our listeners should reciprocate. You know, his office is Hartman and Winicki, and it's two offices where?
Paramus and Ridgewood.
So, and I use Dan personally and professionally as well. And, of course, my love is the Second Amendment and firearms ownership, and I use him too. Albert's a member of the range, comes in and shoots, hangs out. He's a cigar smoker like Dan and I too, and steal the mints. But... you know, well, he's going to need our support, too. Any way we can help him, Albert, I want you to let us know, because I'd love to see this case go through. I know there are other people preparing their carry permits and applications as we speak.
We have quite a few people that are interested, and we need to motivate more people to get involved and show them support and keep it moving forward.
I think we need the recipe to the secret sauce. Like Dan said, we need to see 5 or 6 cases materialize. And then 20 cases, the positives and negatives, so we can see what direction we have to go in. Thank you all for supporting us. Albert, thank you so much for fighting a good fight. Dan, you know I love you. Support him. Check out Hartman and Winicki, please. He's a great guy. Big brain as well. Remember, Evan Nappin will be here May 13th for his gun law seminar. The NJSafeCon.net is July 30th. Make sure you're there. It's at the Parsippany Hilton. And Masad Ayoub will be here June 4th and 5th for Classroom Only Mag 20. Don't miss it.
Well, you've done it again. You've wasted yet another perfectly good hour listening to Gun for Hire Radio. Gun for Hire Radio is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. I'm Sandy Barani. On behalf of my soon-to-be traveling co-host, Master Trainer Anthony Calandro, Albert Almeida, Dan Schmutter, thank you so much for everything that you do. We here in this room know how hard you work. And if you need a lawyer, he's a good lawyer. We love you guys. Winston, it's about time to say goodbye to the good friends that we have and tell them reach one. Please, guys, you hear it every day, but get somebody involved. Right, Winston? All right, guys, we'll see you next week.